Hi, I'm Lee Costantino. I'm the fiction editor of the Stanford Storytelling Project. Welcome to our series of interviews with authors and artists. This week, I'm speaking with Jill McDonough.
I'm speaking to Jill McDonough, and we're talking about her first book of poetry.
Yeah, my first book of poetry.
Habeas Corpus.
Yep.
Why don't you describe the form of the book?
So each one is a sonnet, and they all draw on primary sources, usually contemporary sources. So broadsides that were passed out at colonial executions and newspaper accounts and letters that the condemned wrote before their executions and witness accounts put in rhyming iambic pentameter.
Could you talk about how you decided that this was the project for you?
Right. I had a fellowship in Provincetown at the Fine Arts Work Center. So that's a year for a writer or a painter to hang out and get an apartment and a little bit of money. So while I was there, I was writing all the time, and I wanted to write about the geography there and the history of that place. And so I ended up writing about shipwrecks, and then I was writing about pirates, and then I found out about how I was reading all the stuff about pirates and how we would hang a pirate and then tar his body and put him in a gibbet and hang the gibbet out with the tarred corpse in the bay, which I thought was very interesting. And then I started to realize that every place that I lived in Boston, I was walking along the Boston Common. And then after I read about the pirates, I found out about Quakers. And of course, I knew about witches and realized that all of these beautiful, historical, leafy green spaces were actually built on the bones of people that we executed and then buried at the bottom of a gallows tree. So I got very interested about the secret history of America. And got better and better libraries so that I could find out more and more about these really unknown figures. Like, they were important enough for us to exile into death, but not important enough for us to keep track of and know exactly how many or who we had killed or why. There's a great book called The Death Penalty by Stuart Banner that came out when I was about halfway through the project. And he does a good job of talking about specific people that had been executed. But besides that, mostly books that you could find about the death penalty were legal books or like social books, not about the people themselves.
What about the form of the sonnet? What said to you, death penalty, poems, sonnet?
Right. it's a great question. The sonnet for me is like the, if you're thinking about poetic form, like that's the go-to form. That's really the form of English poetry. So I wanted to do something for these people that was more formal than free verse or prose. I wanted to honor them with something that was, you know, lots of times they didn't get a eulogy, they didn't get a gravestone. So I wanted to give them something. I thought the sonnet was a way of drawing them back into a literary tradition or a culture that we kicked them out. And now I wanted to bring not all of them. We've executed about 20,000 people since colonial, like the recorded legal executions in America. So choosing a representative number and bringing them together and honoring them with the poetic form. And that's one of the reasons I chose a sonnet. Also, it's a love poem. Like, people think of a sonnet as being a love poem. And that helped me stay empathetic when I was writing about some pretty horrible people. They're still people, so I wanted to remember them that way. You know what else is too? It's also really short, because a lot of these stories you could write, and people have, they've written whole novels about these interesting characters, and it was a way of keeping me focused, not on their whole life, but on their death, which is another reason why they're not particularly cheerful.
How have other poets responded to that choice, that formal choice?
They tease me. You know, there's teasing that goes along. Like, it's because it's such an obsessive project. Like, who writes 50 sonnets? And who writes 50 sonnets about one subject? I do, me. So there's some of that. But it's good. I think in general, the project is admired. And people have been very complimentary about it. So my friends tease me about being the kind of freak who would sit around in a library in a basement and work for 5 years reading about people who have been executed. But the impact of the project is such that people then get it, that there's a good reason to pay attention to that secret history and They're grateful, I think. It's a grateful nation who appreciates all the time that I spent, you know, looking at microfiche.
Do you see poetry as having a function?
One of the great things about, like, when you say, oh, well, how do people respond to you doing this writing? Because it's poetry, like, no, the stakes are really low. So I can, in the same way that people don't necessarily get angry at collage artists or weavers, poets can get away with stuff that I think you can't necessarily get away with if you're Stephen King. So what is poetry's function? It's an art. And, you know, I'm happy and lucky that I get to do it.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
But there is something about the content, right? It sort of makes you, you know, think, is there, you know, you talk about sort of making people aware that, you know, these were people and thinking, trying to remain empathetic despite the fact that many of these people did horrible things.
Right.
What would you like? Who's your ideal reader, and what is their epiphanic realization upon reading your book?
I think that it is a secret history. It's a huge secret history, and it is a political work in that it's, I want people to witness this thing that has, it's not just that it's easy to ignore. We're working really hard as a culture to ignore the fact that we've killed this many people and who those people were. So I would like for the book to serve as a sort of memorial service, a collective memorial service to these people who we do not remember. So who would my ideal audience be? Anybody who didn't know that we've legally executed 20,000 people in America.
Okay, cool.
But Americans, I think, yeah, I'm more interested in, yeah, America. Like, the book is being published in Britain. There were not any American publishers who were interested in it, which does not speak to a political point, because there are a lot of American publishers that aren't interested in a lot of people's terrific books of poems. But still, it's a little, I wish that it would have as wide an audience in America as it does in Britain, where it's a little easier to read, I think, because it's not your problem.
Yeah, of course. It's right. Easier to criticize,
right,
people across the Atlantic.
Right.
How do you get a book of poems published?
It's a great question. I think a lot of people, you win a contest. So there are a lot of first book contests. Then if you don't win a contest, you keep trying to win a contest, and if you still fail to win a contest, then you might send it out to a bunch of little publishers and get a, like, make a nice collection of notes saying, sorry, we don't want to publish your book of poems. First, you have to publish the poems in magazines. Like, you've got to make a name for yourself before you publish a book, and then people will become more interested in publishing your book. But there's no agents for poets. There's no, I don't know how else books get published, but there's not a lot of, yeah, it's not like it's a big money maker. Like, I totally get why a commercial enterprise would choose not to publish a book of poems. Mm. But, you know, luckily we're a rich enough country that some of them get published just by mistake.
University presses.
See? Like that. Sweet, yeah. Yeah, of course.
So let's talk a little bit more about poetic form. I mean, there is something formal about the sonnet, for sure.
For sure.
There's a kind of, you know, yeah, it runs against, you could say, contemporary trends in the direction of,
right,
where poetry. I mean, I don't follow poetry, right, the way I follow fiction, but
right. I see what you're saying. I mean, it's a very old form.
Yeah.
And it's like, when I think that a lot of people, when they think of iambic pentameter, then they want to just hide under their covers and die. Like, iambic pentameter is not a phrase that we want to hear after about ninth grade.
Yeah.
When we are forced to understand what it is. But I think it's, like I said about being part of a tradition, I think the form accomplishes a lot, and the form makes, focuses the attention, and it renders more powerful and more condensed what could be kind of sloppy is in prose.
I think a lot of people probably run away from the form because it's, you know, shoved down their throat at a young age in,
right,
a way that harbors bad associations. But I wonder, in writing...
Was it shoved down yours? Because
not really.
Mine either. I wished that I mean, I as a young poet, I was very interested in understanding more about these traditions because I wanted to see myself as part of a larger literary tradition, not just as like a poet in the 90s, but like a poet in English. So then what did that mean and what tradition was I going to insert myself into? And how could I fit into that larger, I mean, by larger, I mean like thousands of years project. So understanding historically what poetry has meant was very important to me. And nobody taught me that stuff. I had to figure it out on my own. And my good friend Maggie Dietz knew a lot about poetic form and meter in particular. Meter was just a mystery to me when I was in my early 20s. But I really wanted to understand it. Yeah. So I think the phrase iambic pentameter maybe gets shoved down your throat when you're studying Shakespeare when you're in the ninth grade. But actually knowing what the hell is going on, yeah. Not so much.
I guess to the degree that I appreciate poetry, I actually appreciate poems with forms, you know, like poems that have definite forms.
Right.
More than free-form poetry, because I for me, like, a lot of the pleasure of creative work is the way there's variation within a form.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, like, after this, do you understand something about the sonnet that you didn't before? Do you read them differently? Are you, like, really intimate with the sonnet?
I'm pretty intimate with the sonnet. I spent a lot of time writing sonnets and reading sonnets and thinking about sonnets. It was very difficult to have a line that was more than, was longer than a line of iambic pentameter after I finished with this project. Like, once I wanted to write free verse again, it was hard to let loose in those ways and have like big sloppy lines and discursive asides. But you know, that's a satisfying and completely legitimate way to go. So maybe it's like a runner who like is doing 50-yard sprints for 5 years and then is like, I think I'm going to try a marathon. Like, I'm going to try cross country. Or I'm going to try, I don't know, riding my bicycle, like doing something else. So it was a terrific workout for me as a writer. And I think I have a lot more admiration for people who write sonnets, and I'm more excited about like being able to, it's like, any skill that you develop, like if you're a carpenter, then you have better appreciation for architecture. So being on the inside of a sonnet for that long, trying to figure out how to make it accomplish the larger goals that I had was, that's something that I'm really happy that I gained from that part of the project.